Company of One, episode number 10. Hello and welcome to the 10th episode of Company of One. My name, the person who's barely talking to you, who has a cold and sinus and allergies, my name is Del Callahan. This podcast we do to help you learn how to increase your income, how to add value, whether you're working for a large, massive corporation or you are working for yourself as an independent or solo entrepreneur. You know, you have the same problems. You're both entrepreneurs, whether you realize it or not, and you're both responsible for your career. You're both responsible for your income. So that's what we're here to do, is we're here to teach you how to take control, how to get back control of some of those things. In this episode in particular, we're going to be focused on the issue of the number one career killer. And it's probably going to be a little bit surprising. What is that number one career killer? Because people so often believe it's technological, you know, skill sets or things like that. Because as you see, many people as they get older, they'll say, "I can't get another job because I'm, you know, technologically outplaced." And there's all kinds of reasons that where people say their career was killed, but that's not the big one. So hopefully you'll find and you'll hear what we did, and hopefully you'll agree. And I think you will. I think it's pretty obvious what it is once you hear about it and kind of walk your way through it. Also, we'll be talking about how to get rid of that number one career killer and how to get rid of it for good. Maybe that's more important. What I'm going to do is like we did last time, partly because my voice is giving out. I had recorded this in the vehicle on the way to do a talk on the number one career killer. So rather than me lose my voice here and just crack up on you in a minute, we'll figure the audio, the background audio that we've cleaned up, the noise, did some new noise removal from the car, is going to be better audio quality than listening to me talking to this high-end microphone, but my voice is breaking up. So we're going to bring that to you in just a minute. But first of all, in this episode, it was brought to you, the financials cost money to bring you these kind of things. We pay for resources, we pay for things, and it's brought to you by our webinar series. It was actually two webinar series that we're planning, so it's kind of pre-advertising, is Networking for Introverts and Awaken Your Entrepreneur. Both things we're going to be doing in a webinar series. And they'll be turned into products, you know, video products or downloadable products probably. But those are the series that we teach people how to network and how to operate like an entrepreneur and the kind of things that you need to do. And especially true for those people who are looking to grow their business that kind of gotten stagnated, or people who are looking to start a business and they don't know where to start. And that's the Awaken Your Entrepreneur in series. Or the Awaken Your Entrepreneur series. Let's get right into the show, though, before we do anything else, and then we'll kind of close it up and see what time we have left. So we're going to get now to the number one career killer. We're going to spend some time with a group of people talking about the number one career killer here in just about a couple of hours. I'm on the road. And it's the number one career killer. I mean, I kind of hate the title, but we got stuck with it. But, you know, people are always surprised about what kills careers and what makes value or not. But let's just be blunt. The number one career killer is lack of passion. Now that sounds, you know, we throw the word passion around so often it seems meaningless. It seems touchy-feely, and who cares about passion? You know, that's what motivational speakers talk about. It's garbage. It's a dream. It's a pipe dream. But, you know, what I mean is every single one of us wants to hire passionate people. I mean, we're all in business. We're all hiring people. We're all putting people to work. And, you know, you may argue that with me, but think about it. Have you hired anybody lately? Because every time you take your wallet out of your pocket and you exchange money for something, you're hiring somebody. You're not putting them on a payroll, but you're paying them to provide a service. You're hiring them.
And you think about it, on the things that matter, do you care about passion? When I find a house painter for my home, do I want a guy who's just like, oh, yeah, you know, I can slap on paint, I don't care? Or would I rather have the guy who likes to make homes look beautiful and perfect and really wants to carry an image about his company? And that's who I want. Now, maybe that doesn't hit you home, but let's put this a little more powerful and personal. When you go to the doctor and they say, you need surgery, do you want the surgeon to be somebody who's like, well, I got into surgery and healthcare because my mom and dad said I'd be a good doctor, but, you know, really, I just kind of do this to play golf. I do the bare minimum I can, and here we're going to schedule Thursday for Thursday afternoon. Is that the guy you want or the girl you want? I'm going to bet not. The one you want is the one who's so driven, who goes to conferences, who learns all the latest techniques, who knows everything they can about it, who's passionate and loves it. That's who I want as my doctor. That's who I want advising me. I want them advising me on my health. I want them advising me on my business. Right? Because then my business is a high value proposition. So just like you want that when you hire somebody, they do too. And for their business, you're part of it. They want you to be passionate. Now there's some other characteristics that do matter too. It's, you know, passion, competence, and character. Now, character is non-negotiable to me and to most people. Quite frankly, you'll find that character is a high thing. You know, you can have all the competence in the world and all the passion in the world, but without character, you're toast. We don't want you. So that's just a non-negotiable. That's got to be there. But the other thing that's there is competence. Now, we obviously want competent people. And some things, the competence and the amount of time it takes to get competence is more challenging than others. It's really surprising how often passion trumps confidence. Right? Passion can kill confidence easily because a passionate person will figure out how to make something happen. A passionate person will learn and learn fast and learn aggressively. And a passionate person will not quit. A competent person just does what they know how to do. And again, it's that doctor. I know how to do this kind of surgery. I've been doing it for 30 years. You know, it may have changed in 30 years, but I want passion. I want passion first. So do you. Now, you think about it, you know, what's going on in this country and what's going on in America. And if you've heard me talk before, you know that I spend a lot of time talking about the fact that most people in America hate their jobs. They hate what they do for a living. I mean, most, over 50%. Now, the fact that you're listening to this and you're trying to grow may up your category a little bit. You may be, maybe the people listening to this and people trying to grow, maybe, you know, 25% of you hate your job. But guaranteed, a good percent of you do. You hate it. You hate the people you work with. You hate what you do. You hate the company. You hate what it stands for. You would do anything else. And you're settling. Yeah, that's right. I said you're settling. You know, I remember so clearly when I worked at Bell South and a friend of mine, and she'd been there a few years before me, she stood up, or she was expressing a moment of frustration, and I would say she's a gal that certainly competent. You know, I think of high character. She was okay with the job, but I remember her telling me one time, and she looks at me dead in the eye, and she says, "I only got 15 more years to put up with this crap," and I thought, wow. And what she meant was she was about 15 years in. She had 15 more years to go to retire. And I thought, I mean, that shocked me. I was stunned by the thought. I mean, I understand a person who's got 27 years in. I got 3 years to go. I kind of get the mentality. not really, but I think I can understand what they're getting at. But 15 years in, I got 15 years to go. Oh my gosh, technology's changed. Twitter hasn't been around 15 years and dominates. Facebook, technology will change rapidly in 15 years. People will change. You'll grow a child in 15 years. What? What? Many people have had two or three careers in 15 years. And she's settling. She's settling. 15 years to go. She's insane. I mean, to me, that's insane. You may be there. You may be in that mode. That was a wake-up call. I didn't last much longer at this company after that. It was a wake-up call to begin to understand. I began to understand that I had to find what I was passionate about. I began to understand there's other people out there that are living passion. You know, another thing that kind of came clear to me, I mean, I was already aware that I was living in a Dilbert cartoon. I mean, I was in the telecommunications industry, and if you know anything about Dilbert, and Scott Adams, I believe is his name, that does Dilbert, he comes from telecommunications industry, basically the same company I came from. Different name, same company. It's all AT&T now. And so his Dilbert cartoons, while they represent so much industry in America, his Dilbert cartoons come straight out of telecom industry. And I remember looking at those cartoons and thought, oh my God, I am in Dilbert. I'm living in Dilbert's life. And if you watch the movie or the show The Office, or the original movie The Office, and you look at that and you're like, wow, that is my life. This is sick. This is wrong. This is stupid. This is pointless. That's how I felt. That's how I was feeling. You know, when you look at that and you're like, wow, why do so many Americans put up with this? Why do so many do that? Think about the fact that we still are the freest country in the world. You still can wake up every single day and decide what you want to do, what you want to pursue. You are not doing it, for most of us, because what we've done is we've sold our freedom into self-inflicted slavery. We're slaves. We're slaves. We show up and we continue to do the same thing we do not want to do. Over and over for a dollar. And what's the value of that dollar? I mean, what am I getting? A 1-2% pay raise? And I know I was speaking in a group the other day and I mentioned that. They just laughed at me like, yeah, 2% pay raise would be a wonderful thing. Haven't seen that in years. But I know when I was with Bell South, it wasn't out of the ordinary to see people get 2% pay raises. You know, I'm even with I work with the university right now. I mean, my world is different with the university, but those in the typical administration of the university, 2% pay raise, I think, is good. Take 5%, you're stellar. You know, you just can't move the needle by doing things like that. You're barely keeping up with inflation. Or actually, at 2%, you're not keeping up with inflation. And then you realize, I'm out talking to a lawn care guy who has a good solid high school education, doing my lawns, landscaping for me. And he tells me, he's like, you know, I mean, we're talking about work, we're talking about salary, we're talking about income, we're talking about his business. And he tells me, you know, if I want to double my income, I just mow twice as many yards. And that shocked me too. Of course, you may be shocked at how easily shocked I am, but think about it. Here's a guy with a high school education who's out providing a service, and he can double his income instantaneously. And all of us really, really smart people with all of our degrees and all of our big job titles and all of those kind of things going for us, we're doing good to move it by 2%. Who's smarter? Who really is smarter in this equation? Now, when we look at the people that are wealthy, it's interesting that And this is, I feel like I'm going from a lawn care guy to a very wealthy individual. But you think about it, what do wealthy people value? You know, we think about them valuing money and they value all their toys and everything. And I'm sure that we all value our toys and we all value money. And those kind of things are important. I get it. But let's just be realistic. At the end of the day, and I've had people that were extremely high net worth people, use this with me and say, we live in a house. We all live in a house. Their house might be bigger. It might be have special things in it. It might be in a better neighborhood or more expensive neighborhood. But no matter who you are, if you're, any normal American, your house, just like his house, keeps you warm in the winter, cool in the summer, and dry and safe. And at the end of the day, that's all he really cares about, and that's all you really care about, right? I mean, there's other factors that are important, but that's what you're really after. And then telling me that, his car might be nicer, and while it might be more plush, and while it might, have the nicer sticker on the front end than the average Americans, it basically performs the same task. It gets them from point A to point B safely, efficiently, comfortably. And really when you start to peel back the layers, there's not a lot of difference between the lifestyle of the extremely wealthy and the lifestyle of the average American, except in one area. And this has always been stunning to me, that this is what people seem to value most when you really peel back the layers, when you really start asking the questions of where their value is. They value freedom. They value freedom of who to work with, who not to work with, what projects to do, what projects not to do. They value the freedom of whether to go to their son's baseball game or not, or work and go to a meeting. They value the freedom of whether to take vacation in a certain week or have to wait and look at everybody else's schedule first to determine where you could get off, because you do it in a lottery system. They value freedom to make their own choices of how they work, when they work, what they do, and how they do it. So do I, by the way. I value that. I imagine so do you. You value that. Some of us may have it, some of us may not. To me, I look at my life and I'm thinking, wow. And I don't want to sound lazy or incompetent, but I don't know that I could live back in the Dilbert cartoon. I mean, I could. I really think I know how to now. I think I understand the principles now. But I don't want to. I don't want to. I don't want to live like that. And what's stunning is we don't have to. So let me kind of give you a couple of thoughts on passion and rediscovering passion. Because at this point in the time, if you're listening to this, you're probably thinking, wow, this is really depressing. I'm just going to go shoot myself in the head. Especially if you're living that life. If you're the one saying, I got 15 more years. And if you're the one saying, I can't stand Monday mornings because, it's a killer. I live for Friday because Saturday comes after. Sunday I dread because Monday comes after. If that's the life you're living, I get it. I understand. I've been there. You have great company. If that's any comfort at all, you have great company. But how do you get past that? Now, obviously, some things that you could do is you could go out and you could, find your passion and do some of those things. And if you go to my website, we talk through that. We have a free download on how to find your calling. Because that's where passion usually starts. Is you can, there are certain things that we are all passionate about. And for the most part, we can't identify them. That's always stunning to me, that people can't identify their own passions. And I can tell you stories about passions and how people have identified them and found out what they really love to do and they move in a new direction in their career, and things take off wildly, and they get control, and they get freedom, and they get money, and they get all those things that come with it. But that's not really the point here. I mean, I think that's something you want to do, but that's not an immediate solution. An immediate solution is, how do you become more passionate? Because if there is a number one career killer, let's just be realistic. Most of us need our careers. Most of us need our income. Most of us need our money coming in. And we can't just say, hey, I quit, take this job and shove it, and I'm going to go off and do something else. You know, you can't do that. To do that would be irresponsible, not only to the people that you serve on the job, but also irresponsible to your family, especially if you're the breadwinner in the family. Totally irresponsible way to live. So, in the short, how can you gain that passion? So I'm going to give you a couple of thoughts on that. The first thing you've got to do is reconnect. I mean, you've got to find out who it is that you're serving. Now, that sounds a little silly, and this is going to sound like marketing, and some of you are going to say, I don't see how that's going to make me more passionate. Trust me, this will make you more passionate. It has a profound impact on how you do business and how you live your life and what you do and what you don't do. You've got to understand who you serve. You've got to reconnect. Now, I recognize that many of you are saying, I get my paycheck from, you know, the chief financial officer who I've never met and never will meet. And some of you are closer to that person. And that's not what I mean. I mean, that's part what I mean. Maybe that's what I mean. But for so many people, who you serve is that internal customer or groups of customer. They may be peers. They may be team members. They may be your boss. It may be your boss's boss. And it's probably a collection of several of these people that you serve, and the things that you do daily impact them. Impact them directly. And because you impact them, you impact the bottom line of the company. Now, some of you may not know how you can impact the bottom line, but there are people you serve, and you've got to figure out who they are. Now, why is that important? Why does that have anything to do with passion? This sounds more like I'm trying to do a better job, a corporate rah-rah stuff. And yeah, corporate rah-rah people do bring all that kind of garbage in. But let's just be realistic. They bring it in for their own reasons. I'm talking about for your reasons now. This matters because at the bottom of everything, we all want to serve. We want to matter. We want to make a difference. You become and you lose passion when you realize that what you're doing, nobody cares about. It doesn't matter if I don't do it or do not do it. I remember when I was in Bell South and we were running test cases. And we would have months of test cases to run on new products before they were released to the field. And we were the evaluation group. You know, our job and responsibility was to make sure that some new product or service released into the network to serve hundreds of thousands of customers wouldn't kill 20 million customer service. Yeah, I mean, that's dramatic, but that's essentially what we were doing. You know, it was quality, and it was protection of the network. So we would come up with these great test plans, and as development cycle, you always have a release date when it's going to be released to the field, and then you have the date the developers would hand it off to the test team. And, of course, you know what happens. The test team never got it on time, and it got to be where we were getting the release, we had, you know, 30, 40 days worth of testing to do. We were getting the release hours before it was to be released to the market. And of course, we never move the release date. You just don't do that. We just didn't test. So you were rubber stamping things. You were saying you couldn't run tests. You know, it became clear that what we did not matter. It was pointless. You know, so when you find yourself in that situation, and many of you are, or at least you feel like you are, you've got to go back and reconnect with the people you're serving, and try to, and that's important to first identify who they are. Now, once you've identified who they are, your second step is to go talk to them. Now, this may seem kind of obvious, but nobody does it. Trust me, nobody does this. I've seen people wildly set their careers apart from doing this one step. Because something happens when you go and talk to your internal customers. Here's the way I would recommend doing it is to take a list of, here's all the things I do that matter. Here are the tasks I do that matter on a daily basis. Here are the things that I'm doing, and here's who I'm serving with it. And so if I have my boss is named Joe, for instance, and I go sit down with Joe, I think here's the things, I've written them down, that I think that I do that matter. Here's what I do. Here's what I spend all my time doing, and I think these things in particular is what you are caring about, what you care about, what you want me to do, and the things that add value to you. Am I correct? Is there something on this list that doesn't belong? Or more importantly, is there something that belongs on the list that's not there? Now, that seems obvious, and most of you are going to say, well, I know the answer to that. Of course, I talk to my boss all the time. And this is especially true of people in small companies that say, we talk to the CEO on a daily basis. We're good friends. We go to lunch together. And yet, they don't ask this question. They think they know. You probably don't. I'm pretty sure, because I've done this many, many times before, and I've seen it done many, many times before. Go talk to them. So just by identifying your customers and going and talking to them, you'll find weird things happen. Number one, you'll open up conversation with these people, these key people that you think you're serving, that you haven't ever had before, or it hasn't been this clear. Some people will say, you don't serve me at all. What you're doing, yes, you keep handing me this report every month, and yeah, I guess I appreciate it, but I don't ever use it. I throw it away. But I don't want to say that, because I figure you're handing it to me just because you're handing it to a bunch of other people. And you're sitting there saying, no, I do it just for you, because the last person in your job, they needed it. You know, and you have these conversations about what's needed and what's not needed, because people never bring it up because they don't have time to bring up these little mundane things that you do, but it's not mundane to you. It's busy work. Now you realize that. You may also find out there's some things that you do that's not on the list that's of extreme value. I've had a gentleman recently that, doing this kind of conversation, what came out was that his extreme value was fuzzy, but it was that he was really good at going between the teams. He was that person that could find common ground between the business relationships and the IT departments, where the business people are wanting the IT people to produce and the IT people can't produce at the same time. And, well, you know how that works. You live that life. Whether it's engineering and marketing or a business administration and IT, you know, whatever it is. There's always a disconnect between people speaking two different languages and two different objectives. So he realized, because people started telling him, that his special sauce was he could sit down in a meeting with these people, and because of his personality, because of he was lighthearted and serious at the same time, he was the guy that achieved common ground. He was the conduit to getting things done. How did he measure that? What was the value of that? Well, he didn't know, but it became clearer and clearer and clearer. This was the value he added. It's not in the job description, but it's what he did, and it's what he was known for, and it's what his expertise was. That is powerful. As a matter of fact, that very individual is looking to, how do you leverage that common ground ability into a career? What was lack of passion, and, you know, I'm showing up doing my job, has turned into, wow, I have a something special here that I can work with. What do I do with it? Now that's going to happen to you as you do these two things, as you identify your customers And as you go talk to them, you're going to uncover things that you do and things that you're going to find yourself wanting to spend more time and energy on. You're going to be looking to establish and correct relationships. Because, again, what we all want, one of the things that drives us in passion is that we're serving somebody and they appreciate our service. And nothing helps you understand that. Nothing helps you serve better than having this communication. It's simple. And yet it's never done. People in the world of project management tell me this is part of the process to go do this. And yet they do it in a sterile way. You know, most of the things I've seen, it's very sterile, and they're talking to the teams, but they're not really talking to the right people. They're talking to the teams about projects, but they're not talking to their bosses and those people they serve. Because the people they serve might be other people on the project management team. They may be people who are not on the project management team at all. So they get these, you know, it sounds like a consultant coming in and having this conversation instead of somebody who cares. What you're looking for is to connect with people on a personal level in a way that cares. Find out who your customers are and go talk to them. You know, and this may seem, well, Dale, this sounds really nice, but thank you very much. I understand. I get it. I cannot sit here and explain it. I could tell you story after story after story of how people have discovered things. You know, their stories don't really matter. I mean, they're there. Your story is what matters. Your situation is going to be a little different. I mean, I can tell you some things you will discover. You will discover some people in middle management who don't have a clue of what you should be doing, who don't have a clue of what you do. People who are in your direct chain of command and maybe your direct boss are totally clueless about what you do for a living and what you do and what value you add. People in the middle management who don't even understand where you might should add value. Not that they're dumb people, not that they don't care, but they're totally out of the loop of what adds value to the corporation. Those are stunning revelations I usually find when people get inside companies, and this is especially true in larger companies, and they realize that nobody on their team knows what they should really be doing to add to the bottom line of the company, or do they add to the bottom line of the company, or are they a division that's about to be closed down because they add no value at all? But they're really busy. They got lots of activity and lots of work. But they are so disconnected, they don't realize it. So there's two steps. Reconnect with the people. Find out who your customers are and then go talk to them about what value you add and get a list. So the third thing is very simple. It's begin a process improvement plan. Now, I hate that, but let's call it a me improvement plan instead, because I hate the word process improvement because it's been dumbed down by corporate America and corporate speak. It's a me improvement plan. Can you do something? Let's look at the list as you talk to people. Think about little things that you can do to add value. Maybe there's information that somebody needs that you have that you didn't realize they needed. You could print that out. You could deliver it to them in email. Weekly, daily, whatever. You can now clue them into what's going on and add tremendous value to them, but they didn't know you had it. And you have it at your fingertips. There's, you know, just look at the little things that you can do. And don't overwhelm yourself, by the way, because you still are probably busy doing some of the mundane stuff. But what's happening is you're beginning to see, how can I add more value? And just take, let's say you do nothing but schedule 1 hour a week. Okay, 1 hour a week, Dale, you're joking. Okay, give yourself 15 minutes on a Friday. Whatever. Put it on your calendar. Spend 15 minutes less checking email. Put it on your calendar to do a me improvement plan. If you don't want anybody to know what it is, call it a MIP. They'll think it stands for something powerful and some big giant acronym. Or better yet, make up a cool acronym for it. I'm on the MIP team. I have a meeting with the MIP team for that time. Just tell people you have a commitment. During that time, look at what you can do in the next week. What thing can you do in the next week to move the needle just a little? You know, and you're probably thinking, Dale, how's this going to generate passion? But I think if you're thinking about that, if you're really thinking with me, you're already a little bit excited because I'm giving you something to do that's tangible, that's meaningful. You may be a little nervous because you don't really want to talk to these people and you're kind of scared. You don't necessarily have the good relationships. Maybe you're that total introvert. But I think you're a little excited too. Because, and it is exciting. It's exciting when you find out what matters. Now, let me give you the other thing. Now, those three steps, reconnect, find out who it is that you are serving, go talk to them, learn where you add value and not, and then make yourself an immediate improvement plan and schedule some time for that. Now, let me tell you what comes out of this. Just give you some examples. Without using any names, I'll just tell you just some recent examples that people have. Obviously, people change careers, they change jobs when they do stuff like this. It's especially true if you start talking to people outside of your company. That's another talk. That's our networking for introverts we do, that we teach you how to connect and find open opportunities. But this is kind of the beginning of it. But what happens if you do this internally? So many people have moved up, moved over, moved to new positions internally. I have one gentleman that works with that's a client. That works with a major car manufacturer, and he's on a manufacturing/engineering team. And he's beginning to, you know, kind of look around and talk about to people and talk about who adds value, because that's some of the things that we did through our coaching program. So he's doing much of this. He's doing a little bit more, but he's doing much of this in terms of trying to figure out how he adds value. In it, he's having conversations with people. In it, he's realizing that, wow, they're not as smart as they are. And not that they're not as smart, but that in a sense, there's a little bit of cluelessness at the higher levels of the company. Not that they're dumb, not that they're uneducated, not that they don't care, but they're disconnected. They're disconnected from the reality of the day-to-day. So he's realizing in little conversations as he's learning things, little things get said, and they realize he adds value just by having the conversation. Assume he didn't even do the me improvement plan. Just by having the conversation, he's adding value. He's adding perspective to the team, where most people are sitting quietly and they just do their job and they don't voice questions. Now, he's not so much voicing opinions as he's voicing the questions. But as he's voiced the questions over a period of times, now they're asking his opinions. And so now he's finding himself meeting with the boss's boss's boss, being called into meetings where only senior executives would be, to talk about what matters. And now he's working for a different team. He's working like a dog. Let's not be joking about it, because he's adding so much value. He's not only doing his other job, but he's adding perspective to so many other things. Now, what's going to come out of that is going to be powerful. Is he excited? Is he having a blast? You better believe it. This guy just has a big fat smile on his face. You know, he's working hard. He's going 90 to nothing, but he's loving every minute of it. I see this kind of thing happen in other companies where people are taking initiative because they ask questions. I see some people moving. We won't even go into all the examples, but I've seen so many people that have told me, Dale, I used to hate my job. And as a matter of fact, many of them were coming to me looking for other work, and especially clients of ours. You know, I've got to get out of there. Can't stand it. It's a dead end. It's boring. There's no passion, you know, all those kind of things. But by going on and doing these exercises, because we kind of force them to, they rediscover, they reconnect, and they find opportunity. And I was talking to one gal the other day who's done just this, and she said, you know, I used to be that I was in a software development. I'm, you know, nobody cared about what I did. I was just punching out numbers, punching out code. And now, as I started realizing it and having conversations, I realized I have data, I have code, I have data access to databases that can help answer some of the questions they have and pull some of that data out. And as she begins to do this, she moves into the world of business intelligence. And then she finds herself moved to a position of business intelligence. And she finds that business intelligence work starting to add so much value to the company, the owners of the company are paying attention, close attention, to what she's doing. And, you know, her comment was, I'm playing with the same data, but now I'm giving answers that people care about instead of just manipulating data. And now she has basically developed a department of herself, and now this one gal is hiring other people on her team. But she's the leader. She's passionate. And she loves her job. You know, how cool is it? How cool is it to do that? To find something that you love, that serves other people, and they love you serving them. This you can do too. I remind you that in this country, over 50% of the people hate their job. So if you're in that category, fine. But do something about it. Take action. Take these three steps and refine that passion.
Okay, that is it. Number one, career killer. Hopefully you found that useful. And not now, maybe, but hopefully you think about that. You think through that. You look at some of the things that you can do. A lot of the same various content you can find on our website, on the blog at dalecallahan.com. And you'll find various articles and various blog posts that we have about taking care of your customer. If you look up how to increase your income, if you look up networking, a lot of things really come back to some of those core principles of focusing on your customers, focusing on how to serve people. It's just always amazing to me as I look at people and work with people, they can just get so passionate once they start realizing that their work matters, that what they're doing helps people, that it makes a difference. That's what we all really want, is to make a difference. So I hope you try to do that, and I'm going to ask you for feedback on that. How does that work for you? What have you learned? How have some of these things worked out for you? And also, by the way, give me some feedback in terms of the audio. Was the audio quality on this, is that a big deal? I mean, is it hard to hear? You know, we're experimenting. We're in our 10th episode here, so we're just experimenting, working around. And, you know, what we do here, we do for you. If the show is too short, too long, too loud, too, tell us what it is that's missing. Tell us what it is that you would like to see done better. Say, you know, I kind of like the content. I like what we're doing. I like the general message. But, and I say that for anybody, anybody's podcast, anybody's blog, anything that you read. Now, they may not listen, but we are. We're listening. Because, you know, we can't solve everybody's problem. We understand that. But a lot of times, we don't get, and I say this for all bloggers, for all podcasters, for all anybody doing anything, we don't get feedback. We don't get a lot of, you know, we'll get comments. I get a lot of comments via email. But we may not get constructive criticism, if you will. And so I suggest you do that every opportunity that you can. Tell people, hey, that's great, but I would like could you do this? I sure would love it if you did this. They may not be able to incorporate it in. They may not be able to do things that you want to do. But make your voice heard. That's part of adding value. is make your voice heard. And I ask that you do that for us. You can give me feedback by sending me email at dale@dalecallahan.com. You can find my email address all over the web, and I've got a couple of email addresses. You can find my UAB address. Look, they're all going to end up the same place. So however you feel free to give feedback, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, you can find me in all of those areas. Also on my website, dalecallahan.com, you see a little speak pipe. Or I don't know if it's called that, but on the website, on the right hand side, there's a little button you can hit, and just right from your computer, you can leave a message, just like a voice message, and it goes straight to my email. So that's a great way to get feedback. A lot of people use that. It's a great tool for giving somebody immediate feedback. And if you're like me, and if you're typo challenged, that's a great way to just get your message, not think about it, close it down, and boom, you're done. So I do encourage you, and I would encourage you to give us some ratings if you like this show and if you like the content and if you like what we're doing, to rate us on iTunes. Give us some feedback on iTunes. That's for other people. So as they come and listen to this show, that, you know, tell them what kind of value it's going to add. I ask that you do that, and again, I ask that you do that not only for me. I mean, don't go tearing people down, but if you find people of value, make a comment. Make it known that you think this is of value. Make your voice heard. And I thank you very much for your time and your support. Wonderful.